You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where our hearts are heavy and it's not from overheating. If you enjoy your trip, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. And if you'd like to tip us, stop by Patreon, patreon.com/themidside. The reason I mentioned our hearts being heavy is we got some pretty surprising and upsetting news this past week. Actually, I think Daniel was the one who first reported it. Midsider Teresa has passed away. And this is disconcerting to me personally because, and if you watched my vlog and read the post about it on themidside.com, you saw a little bit about that, about what she means to us as a show. But for me, she was one of the first people to really not only support this show, but support all the material that I personally contribute to it, the analysis of shows and finding the thematic meaning and the thematic depth to it. And she was very passionate about it. And I think she might have been our first Patreon supporter. So I was actually hit pretty hard by the news when Daniel told me that he saw that her son posted on her Facebook page that she had died, because it came out of nowhere. There was no indications. She wasn't telling anyone she was sick or unhappy or anything. It just seemingly came out of nowhere. I mean, I think she was 59. So, I mean, that's not that old nowadays. And it's crazy that this podcast is so young, but we've already lost such an important and, I would say, founding member of our community. And that hit me hard, and it literally brought tears to my eyes. So, Teresa, I know you can't hear this, but thank you for all you did for the show and all your support. It honestly, I wouldn't have had the motivation to grow it as much as I've personally grown it without your support and without your passion. And that goes for all of the Midsiders out there. Thank you. I hope we don't have to be saying this about you anytime soon. Joining us this trip via Skype from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, what are your memories of Teresa?
Teresa, I've known online for longer than the Midside's been around, and I've only ever known her online, which apparently is a big theme among her many, many online friends. And if you look at the memorial post, she had a lot. But the thing that stands out to me is that while Teresa was very supportive, always sharing stuff that I shared, and you know, rooting on when I was taking down the man. I think my favorite thing about Teresa, and my favorite thing about anyone, but particularly it is when she disagreed with me, she let me know it. And it was not like a small sort of like, it was like, God, you're wrong about that. Or what a horrible opinion. And I knew, I took it perfectly fine because I knew her personality and I knew from her online presence that this is the way she expressed herself, and I appreciated it because I spend a lot of my day sugarcoating everything. It's sort of what I do in my job, in my professional life. And to have that sort of bluntness with someone online, I'm not going to offend this person. Like, I like that. I like that about anyone who does that. So
thanks, Teresa. Yeah, that's probably why she appreciated our show, right?
Yeah, indeed.
And that actually does remind me of a story when she actually got into a disagreement with Midsider Katrina on a post I shared, where Katrina did an appearance on Stefan Molyneux's podcast about Trump and why people don't like Trump. And they got into a long disagreement because both of them will very much tell you if you're wrong.
Yes. Seems to be a theme among our Midsiders, I think. And that's a good thing to cultivate among a community of people who are interested in ideas.
Agreed. And, you know, when we talk about people who will tell you when you're wrong, also joining us via Skype from the hills of white privilege, James Elias. James, I know you're more new to this whole mid-side community thing because you've only been here this season. This was your debut season. What does it mean to you to see this sort of, support in the way we're reacting to this? Does this tell you anything about your experience on the show? Or are you now upset you're here because we're so emotionally involved? Or does it make you like it more?
I mean, it makes me feel like I'm, part of a long, or I don't know about too long, but it,
just the right size. It'll give you pleasure, but it won't hurt you.
A long, hard tradition of whoever's managing Teresa's page actually friended me on Facebook, so I'm now friends with Teresa's Facebook profile, and I'm glad that I'm on the show now, and I can see that there's a long history of people supporting the show and for getting the show to this point where I could be on it.
Well said. So let's move on with the show and talk about things that Teresa would love to hear us make fun of. It's time for The News with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Some of us knew this day was coming. That doesn't mean we feared it any less. The University of Iowa has officially become the first school to add a social justice bachelor's degree after its Board of Regents approved the motion last Thursday. The school already offered a first-year seminar on social justice as well as a, quote, justice for all living learning community where students can, guess what, live and learn about systemic problems in our society. University officials told the Iowa City Press Citizen that both programs had been so well received with full endowment in the Justice for All Learning community that demand for an actual degree program on the topic just made sense. And this is where it gets more farcical. The proposed program will appeal to students who want a vocation related to helping others or careers in government services or the nonprofit sector, interested in teaching or social work. This is a degree for bureaucrats. Oh, I just can't. I can't do it this week, Justin. I tried to get up for this story, tried to get excited to make fun of it, and I don't know. It's like I almost have water in my lungs. I just can't quite breathe right.
Is that a little overheated?
Yeah. I just can't do it. What do you do with this?
Well, nothing is what
art,
you do with
listen,
it.
Listen, fucking, you know what degree?
Well, it's the opposite of doing. You prevent other people from doing things. That's what it's the main thing.
That's a very
good
point.
I knew someone for this degree, and you know what's funny is that he, much of a social justice guy, he actually liked guns and stuff like that. Like, he'd go out airsoft. But he ended up getting a degree in environmental science, and now and then last I heard, I don't talk to this person anymore, but last I heard of him, he was watching a bulldozer do actual work, or not a bulldozer, a scooper, one of those heavy, heavy equipment things, scooping, doing actual work, excavating the earth, and he was watching it to make sure it environmental standards. So I'm just imagining just thousands of this guy just watching, we're just gonna be here just watching other people do actual work. That is your we give you money for.
That's a very good point, James. It's making sure other people don't do too much actual work.
Yeah, right. I was gonna say, I mean, it sounds like it's a way to get them out of the way, as long as they're not holding guns and telling you to stop working or telling you how to work.
It is, though. They are. And it's sort of like welfare for people who are angry at everyone else.
Yeah.
I guess it's just welfare. But what I actually think this is a really interesting ploy, is what I would say. Because for years, there has been one degree that has been sort of the quote-unquote social justice, feminist, liberal degree. And I think it's a ploy by them to actually make their degree look practical again, which is art history. I think this is just a secret ploy by the art history department to get people to stop making fun of their degree. So when people get an art history degree, they can now say, no, it's better than that social justice bullshit.
Well, they've succeeded, because just in this conversation, art history sounds like a legitimate thing.
Yeah, wait, what's
wildly practical compared to this? Well, James, the stereotype was you go to school and you get an art history degree, you graduate with $100,000 in debt, and then you work at McDonald's. That was like the stereotype. But now,
Right. But now
the stereotype has come to life in an actual degree that is, in fact, a stereotype.
So. Right, but the sad thing is that there, you know, the government makes jobs for these shitheads, you know, whereas art, you know, someone who understands the history of art might become, you know, a teacher or something and teach about the history of whatever.
Of art?
Understand art. Maybe of art, but, you know, that in order to teach the history of art, you probably have to be a professor. But, like, all the other people don't make it quite as far. At least you can be some kind of history teacher at a high school or something, you know. That's, or maybe an art teacher at a high school, all this stuff.
Or bulletin board at a Hardee's. You know. It's basically endless possibilities with an art major, art history major.
Just like the endless apps you'll be serving to your clients at TGI Fridays.
Endless apps. Can I say apps? I thought copyrighted apps.
Yeah, I always imagined like them just like forcing you to download like as many apps as your phone can possibly handle.
Yeah, I got confused and so used the TGI Fridays. I was like, "What? How do you serve someone apps?" Like, but
yes. Speaking of Justin, what is app?
Oh, you're gonna transition to the next story already?
Yeah, I'm done with this story.
Can I just say that I pictured somebody with a double major in social justice and women's studies, and I died a little bit on the inside?
Double major.
My friend Matt, or rather my cousin Matt Elias, who is actually a mid-sider. He's not a Patreon supporter or anything. Like, he's a college student, actually. He's in his second year of college, starting right about now, actually. And he told me, he said, remember that George Orwell quote? There's a quote from George Orwell where he says, if you want a view of the human future, imagine a boot stomping on a human face forever. Friend Matt, or my cousin Matt's version of this is, he says, if you want a view of the United States' future, just imagine a discussion with a bitchy women's studies major.
Oh, we like this guy already.
And who now has two degrees and say, I have 2 degrees. I double majored in college. No, you quarter majored.
Women's studies and social justice is not combined one major.
Negative 10.
You can do both of those and get like an art history degree, and still the only thing you'd be able to do is art history. So. I asked Justin a little bit ago, what is app, being a little coy.
Yeah, I don't know. What is it?
You sound like Gary Johnson.
Is that an acronym?
my friend and midsider Luke called me, and we were talking about a trip to Boston that I'm going to be doing with. I'm going to be going to a Patriots game with Justin, but I'm going to be spending some time in Boston and seeing Luke. And like in the middle of the conversation, he says, "Dan, so what would you do about Auckland?" And I was like, what? He's like, you don't know what Auckland is? You're a fucking idiot. You're disqualified from being president. And it was the greatest troll ever. But this was one of the political news stories of the weekend. It would have been the political news story of the week if not for hacking Hillary. But we'll start here at Gary Johnson. When on an NBC talk show, MSNBC talk show, God, I almost gave it full NBC status.
I don't know if that's better or worse.
MSNBC is NBC.
NBC.
No, NBC is NBC, but with a debilitating disease.
You never go full NBC, Daniel. You never go full NBC.
That's right. He was asked, Gary Johnson was asked, what would you do about Aleppo? And he sort of looked confused and said, what is Aleppo? Well, first he said to ask him to clarify, and the host just said, Aleppo. Because that helps. But someone asked you to clarify, and you just say the word slowly.
Yeah. The innocence with which Gary Johnson says it is just, what is Aleppo?
And so he got excoriated by the MSNBC host, but, and the internet, but even better was the New York Times. Oh, the New York Times just jumped with giddy excitement down Gary Johnson's throat, basically arguing that this disqualifies him from president. Here's the problem with the New York Times article. Mind you, the New York Times has called itself in its history the paper of record. When you go to the New York Times article by Alan Rappaport, please tweet at him, Gary Johnson asked in an interview stumble, you'll notice two things at the bottom of this article. The first of them says this: an earlier version of this article misidentified the de facto capital of the Islamic State. It is Raqqa in northern Syria, not Aleppo. So in fact, the New York Times, in its debasing of Gary Johnson for not knowing what Aleppo is, did not know.
That is great.
Oh, James. If only that was it.
Can I say something before the second point? Can you say that other, like the other Syrian city name? Raqqa or something?
Raqqa?
Yes. So Raqqa and Aleppo? Why do all the cities in Syria sound like the missing Marx brothers' names?
Raqqa Marx, Aleppo Marx.
Yeah, and seriously, I'm going to admit, I did not know what Aleppo was before this whole story. If somebody asked me, like, what are you going to do about Aleppo? I would be like, are you talking about, like, a Marx brother I don't know about?
I would have said, I don't own a dog. Sorry.
Yeah, that
isn't
was
that, like,
one.
A chain of shitty Mexican restaurants?
It's, I think we figured out it was a Mexican tortilla brand.
So you can put your Alpo dog food inside of your Aleppo tortillas?
Yes, and ship them to Aleppo, where the starving refugee children, I'm sure, would be happy to have them. So there was a correction. The New York Times, by the way, with things at their disposal, like a team of fact checkers and editors, and, oh yeah, the goddamn internet, could not properly identify Aleppo. And then right below that correction is a correction, which says, an earlier version of the above correction misidentified the Syrian capital as Aleppo. It is Damascus. The New York Times, in its excoriative Gary Johnson for not knowing what Aleppo is, got Aleppo wrong not once, but twice in the same goddamn article. Pot, kettle, meet each other.
Can you just not say pot in any story involving Gary Johnson?
He needs it, man. He should not have stopped. It is not helping. The guy needs to calm his shit down. So here's the thing. The debate on Facebook and my personal Facebook got a little bit heated into all this nonsense, was whether or not Gary Johnson, and by the way, Aleppo is a city in Syria that has been part of the Syrian refugee crisis and the battle there in the civil war, and has been a big player. Not that anyone should need to know that, by the way. Anyway, the debate was essentially, does Gary Johnson not knowing what Aleppo is disqualify him from being a serious presidential contender? Gentlemen, what say you?
Well, I had the snide remark to whoever said that on your page that said he wasn't a legitimate candidate. I was like, well, good thing he's not running with one of the major parties then. Like, he's just as legitimate a candidate as anyone. I mean, it's just stupid. I think there's more going on here, but I'll let James answer first.
Well, the thing is, I mean, you have to ask, what is the essential knowledge for being president? Is it required that you know the specific name of a specific city in a conflict? I know I didn't know this name before it was brought up here. Following the conflict, I have no doubt that that's part of what he has been following. He keeps himself up on current events. You know, according to the same news story, he actually committed a previous gaffe, or quote unquote gaffe, where someone was explaining to him about Harriet Tubman, and he asked, and I'm sure in the same innocent way, who's Harriet Tubman? So it's like, I don't know, do you two know who Harriet Tubman is?
Yeah, I know who Harriet Tubman is.
So you generally hear about in grade school because, you know, they're trying to inject more black people into history, I'm guessing.
Oh,
and he
I
didn't
thought
know.
She was like, she sold, like, bathrooms. Like, that's not who you go to when, like, you want new bathrooms.
She's the Aunt Jemima of bathrooms.
That's what I thought. That...
Aunt Jemima of tubs.
No?
Yeah, but the thing is, it's like, is intelligence to be, yeah, right, that was pretty much like one of the most quote-unquote racist things that have been on that show, on this show, and that's saying something.
Wait, how is that racist?
Not racist, but it's the sort of thing that people would get on our case for if those sort of people even listen to this show.
Okay, people, if you're going to get on my case, I actually have to admit that I sort of aped that joke from the show Another Period, where Harriet Tubman is a recurring character, and in her most recent appearance, she is selling tubs. So fuck off.
No. Stop being the Aunt Jemima of bathrooms. Like that, anyway. I don't think that intelligence is to be measured by how many random facts do you know? How many random names can you list off? That is a very base understanding of what intelligence and ability consists of. I have no problem with the fact that he doesn't know Aleppo or Harriet Tubman. That does not reflect upon his intelligence. The fact that he's kind of a waffler and not a real libertarian, you know what? He's still miles ahead of the other, you know, people who are in contest for, you know, the most important job in the world, pretty much.
Wait. Bill Belichick's not retiring.
Zing. It was very well said, James. And one of the things that I want to be sure that everyone knows is it's not as if Gary Johnson said, "What is Aleppo?" The guy, the host, laughs at him, and then they move on. The host says, this capital or the second biggest city in Syria. And Gary Johnson goes, "Oh, Aleppo." And then he begins to explain his answer on Syria. Okay, first of all, his actual answer on Syria, if you're not a libertarian on foreign policy like I am not, is more of a disqualifier for voting for the man than him not recognizing the word Aleppo at 5 a.m. his time on a fucking MSNBC show. But he gave an answer. Like, he understood the context of the question when it was explained to him, and he gave a well-thought-out answer, even if it's one I disagree with. So... what exactly do you want from someone? Wasn't it Trump who said he would be, or is it Hillary? One of the candidates said they would be campaigning in all 52 states. Like, oh, they don't know there's fucking 50 states? Disqualified automatically.
I'm pretty sure that was Obama long ago.
Was it? Oh, yeah. My God. Am I mixing up? Like, did I just black out the past 8 years?
Yes, I'm pretty sure that was an Obama thing.
Okay, the blacking out thing was not a racial comment.
That was more racist than Harriet Tubman.
Our tracks from now on for the rest of the show.
No, Daniel, exactly. I think there's more going on here. I think the MSNBC host set out to trap him, and I think that the way this was reacted to with such vitriol, because I can't remember anything a third-party candidate's said has ever been reacted to in this way, demonstrate that there's a real fear of Gary Johnson, and they needed to disqualify him and socially shame him.
I do agree with you. I'm not one to be a conspiracy theorist here, but the way the host reacted and the fact that the host published an op-ed almost immediately after saying, "I'm the host who tripped up Gary Johnson," I think this was a trap. A trap? Because mostly this sort of MSNBC hosts are not all that honest, and in this op-ed that he wrote about the incident, he specifically says this was not a trap.
It's a trap!
For that reason, I absolutely unequivocally believe it was a trap. If he hadn't brought it up, maybe I wouldn't think that way. By the way, his excuse for this in the argument, he said it was a question that you would hear in the line of a supermarket. He said that.
Fuck, what supermarkets is this guy at?
Clearly doesn't go to the supermarket that I go to where you just avoid all the other people.
I mean, maybe
how
the supermarket.
How can you avoid them?
In...
they're so fucking fat at my Walmart.
Maybe the supermarket in Damascus, you might hear this question. But, like, if someone, again, if someone turned to you in a supermarket and just said, out of nowhere, by the way, no context, no whatever leading up to it, what would you do about Aleppo? And you would probably go, "I'm a pedigree guy. That's what my dog prefers."
Wait. Midsiders. Run this test. Next time you're in the grocery store, turn to the person behind you
now
and ask, what is Aleppo? I guarantee it is fair. I guarantee you most of them still will have no fucking clue what's going on.
And it's what would you do about Aleppo? It's an even more weird question.
Yeah, so do that.
And make sure when someone says, what is Aleppo, you go, Aleppo. Aleppo.
Why is this not, of all the things the internet has memed, why is there not like a Snapchat Vine meme of this? Of kids doing this to people? We have damn Daniel back at it again with the white fans, but we don't have this?
Yeah, internet, you're slacking. Speaking of, they were not slacking, actually, this week. They were in full force because the Gary Johnson story would have been the biggest political story of the week had it not been for Granny Hillary. Finally, James, I feel fucking vindicated as I wanted to take Hillary's health into question all these weeks, and I was shut down by the likes of James and the rest of you non-believers. And it took real clear politics. It took real clear politics, which is, by the way, not some fancy fringe right-wing site.
And by the way, it's appropriate that real clear politics cleared things up.
Indeed. To post video from Twitter user. So it is video from a Twitter user, but Real Clear Politics vetted it and put it up on their site, showing Hillary at leaving a 9/11 memorial ceremony abruptly. And in fact, the video, which you can check out on themidside.com/podcast, we'll make sure that this story gets linked there, basically shows her first propped up against a concrete pole, and then a black van pulls up to take her away, and she cannot walk the three steps to the van. In fact, her ankles buckle, and she appears to become completely unconscious and fall over as people have to drag her into the van.
It's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, Daniel, you it showed is. Us the picture of Weekend at Bernie's.
She does, it, especially because she was wearing fucking little round black glasses, and then she's falling over like this. I thought, oh my god, there's no better fucking meme. I'm sure I'm not the only one to make that connection, but
is it possible that Hillary Clinton's actually dead?
You know, Disney has that animatronic shit that looks pretty real, so I wouldn't put it past him.
No, I went in the Haunted Mansion over the weekend and she wasn't there, so if she was animatronic at Disney, she would have been in there because she's a horror show.
Short side note, I don't think this is apocryphal. I think Dan S, a mutual friend, told me this, so I think it's true. When they were originally doing that animatronic stuff, one of the first ones they opened was the Hall of Presidents. The problem being that there was a malfunction one day with the Abraham Lincoln statue, and the hydraulic line broke, and the hydraulic fluid was shooting out of him. except that at that time, the hydraulic fluid was dyed red.
Was it coming out of the back of his head?
I don't know where it was coming out of, but it was just squirting out of Abe Lincoln onto the audience, and it became like a horror show for about 20 minutes.
That's what you get for going to a theater with Abraham Lincoln in it.
I know. Hashtag mind blown. But yeah. So Hillary, this was the biggest political news of the weekend because Trump and me and all the other loons who had been saying Hillary's in bad health had some bit of vindication. But here's the thing about this video. It doesn't even particularly matter what you think is wrong with her. She said it was, at first she said it was overexhaustion, overheating in the 72 degree or 76 degree weather in New York with a breeze. And then after no one bought that, her campaign came out and said, oh yeah, actually, by the way, the Friday before this, she was diagnosed with pneumonia and she was pushing through and this is complications due to pneumonia. No one's really buying that either because she walked out of her daughter's apartment in New York and started hugging children, which if you have pneumonia and you start hugging children, you are a sick bitch.
Well,
you
wow. Certainly, to be fair, it is Hillary Clinton.
James, what?
So they can't even stick to their own story?
No, they can't stick to their own story. It was overexhaustion and then it was pneumonia and now she's taking some time off. But look, it actually...
Hugging children.
It doesn't even matter what you think this is. And if you don't think it's serious... The problem with this video is it's a video and it looks fucking horrible. It just looks horrible. Yeah, I don't care who this is. If this was any person running for president and they were overexhausted or sick or whatever, and they couldn't walk three steps to a van without being hauled into it, That is just an epically terrible message to send politically.
We did elect FDR 4 times, though.
Yeah, but he kind of lied to everyone. So
I just was going with the catwalk thing.
Yeah.
And then Ronald Reagan, he couldn't get to the car, you know, without help either.
I know, especially with those bullets ripping through his flesh. But, yeah. So, first of all, 2 questions to you. One, do you think this is serious? Do you think there's any evidence that this is serious? And then two, fuck you, James. That's my question. So, I'll take your answer off the air. Okay, going to mute.
What is this, around the horn on ESPN? When did you start muting people?
Muting me.
Oh, okay. I didn't understand that. No, I mean, this is my question, actually. I'm going to throw a question back at you. Doesn't traditionally pneumonia present as a symptom of other conditions when you're old?
It's usually a complication. Yeah,
right, that's what I meant.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not outside the realm of possibility that she could just get it sort of on its own from being exhausted and having a legitimately difficult work schedule, which we know that campaigning is nowhere. I mean, is 10 times as strenuous. So, you know, no worries there whatsoever. But it could be a complication. It could be its own. We don't know.
Yeah, but if you're trying to dissuade people of thinking that she doesn't have an underlying condition, don't say that she has something that's a complication of an underlying condition.
Yeah, maybe. I do think politically pneumonia is better than can't walk 3 steps to the van, maybe has a neurological problem. Because at least with pneumonia, you take it from being scary to her being sympathetic. Like, oh, poor Hillary, she has pneumonia. I don't think it's going to work because they didn't go with it immediately. They sort of changed their story, which is bad, but...
Yeah.
Another thing that I heard on the news was that they didn't allow the press to leave for a number of minutes after the incident took place. They kept the press in the area and didn't let them leave.
Yes.
Released afterwards once Hillary got out of there. I don't know what that means. But to answer your question, Daniel, I still don't think that this is that big of a deal in comparison to everything else. I think to me, it's like, okay, well, this is definitely something we have to look into. We ought to know her health. The thing is, to me, the lie is much bigger. And the fact that she's lied so much in her career, I think the main issue is we have to assume the worst when it comes to her health. Because she's lied so much, we're not going to trust her when she gets some doctor to tell us that she has pneumonia. For all I know, she does have pneumonia, but the reason we make such a big, the reason I think you're actually kind of validly making a big deal about this isn't because like we actually think she definitely has some kind of disease. It's because we have no idea if she's telling the truth. She could have, you know, she could have Alzheimer's for all we know. And although isn't she a little young for that? How old is she?
She's 68.
That's not young for all. I mean,
you're getting there. So, I mean, yeah, we don't know. There's no way for us to know the truth. She could definitely be lying, and that's the sort of thing Donald Trump should be saying. He should say, "Look, I wouldn't claim to know what sort of disease she has, but the fact is we can't trust her when she says it's just pneumonia."
Here's what Donald Trump said. Right. Here's what Donald Trump said. And it's even better than that from a rhetorical perspective. He said,
"Okay."
He said, "I hope she gets better and takes care of herself." Donald Trump said that. Can you believe it? After he hires the guy who runs Breitbart.com to run his campaign, that's what we're getting out of Trump. Reasoned, measured fucking rhetoric.
Yeah, because he doesn't.
I'm tired of this shit.
He doesn't. He doesn't need to say anything. It's anthematic at this point. He calls her Crooked Hillary. First of all, she's a Clinton. I mean, I can't believe James had to say like 8 times, we don't know if she's lying or not. She's a Clinton. Of course she's lying.
And yeah, it's worth pointing out the difference between having a conspiracy theory type thing like, oh, I'm really concerned about her health, and not trusting her when it comes to an issue like this.
So in that regard to that point, James, it's you said it, it's probably more so the fact that she's lying than it is her health. For me, it is, yes, it, you're right, it is more so the fact that she's lying than it is about her health. It is about her health. Like, I think I explained this the last time you were on.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, a president in office who is asked, like, you need to make a life or death decision right now, and she fucking has a seizure and falls over, and then we don't know what the, you know, like, where the vice president is or what the fuck is going on. Like, that's a serious fucking issue. And you know what this boils down to, James? I figured out. I've watched The West Wing too many times. One of the major plots in The West Wing, and someone reminded me of this on Facebook, is that the president hides the fact that he has MS from the people. Mm. Shit hits the fan when he has all these episodes, like on flight, on route to like a major world summit, and it has to be hidden from everyone. And he can't legitimately do his job. And that's kind of what I worry about, though. So it is mostly the lying, but it has something to do with the health. But now we get to do conspiracy theory corner. Ready? Conspiracy theory corner. Okay. So one, the number one thing being thrown around on the conspiracy theory corner among the basket of deplorables, we'll get that momentarily, is that she has Parkinson's. Clearly, no one can know that without diagnosing her. Brain tumors, the other, obviously. But then, and this is, by the way, also on Real Clear Politics now, something falls out of Hillary Clinton's pants as she's being dragged into the van.
Is it her strap-on penis?
Unless her strap-on penis is metallic, no. Something metal, and you can very clearly see from the video, it's not a trick, it's not anything else it could be. It falls out of her pant leg, and it's metal, and it hits the ground right by her foot.
Wait, she's a robot?
She's a robot?
Yes.
Wait, did somebody forget to charge her, and that's what happened?
I think Matt, my coworker, said it's the clip that's holding her reptile skin off, or her human skin off her, anyway.
Oh, she's not a Cylon?
That's right. So literally something metal falls out of her pants. Not her pocket. Falls out of her pant leg. So like, what the fuck is that? What is metal in your pants? Now, wild speculation ensues. Although the leading speculation is that it's probably a part to a catheter. Which is gross to think about. But I guess old people do that. Anyway. That's a speculation corner for this week. Any other wild speculation and rumor?
I think Hillary Clinton's a Cylon.
I would vote for a Cylon over Hillary Clinton. Just pointing that out.
Especially the sexy one.
Yeah, by the way, especially if you are planning on voting against Hillary Clinton, she likely thinks that you are among the basket of deplorables that call Donald Trump their candidate. In a recent talk, she said that about half of Donald Trump supporters are deplorables, such as sexist, racist, xenophobic, anti-Muslim, blah, 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 for which she had to apologize as she realized she was insulting like 33 million Americans or something. Is this similar to like Romney's 47% gaffe that I think lost him the election?
That lost him the election?
I think it did, because it was so close to the end. People were trying to make up their mind, and Romney says 47% of you out there are nothing but government leeches. And I think that really lost him the election.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. If you look at his polling post that, it's just a precipitous drop. Just tanks after that.
Wow.
Yeah. So is this that moment where she's basically saying half of her opponent's supporters are racist, xenophobic, homophobic bigots?
It's
or is this more of Hillary's alt-right strategy?
Yeah, and that's the question. It's what you think of the American psychology, basically. I mean, do you want to mass psychologize here, Daniel? Because it's just, do you think the people are going to identify with Hillary and think that, you know, they hate Trump and all those supporters, or are they going to more identify with Trump and his supporters? And that's the question. She's betting on the fact that everyone thinks Trump is batshit. That's why, like, when she was had her coughing fit, she's like, oh, I'm allergic to Trump. Like, that's what they've gone all in on now. And that's why she thinks she can get away with saying things like this, because she thinks it's normal to act like that.
Yeah. You know what this reminds me more of? Probably because it's putting people in a container. Is when Romney actually was criticized for not having enough women in his Massachusetts governor administration. And he said, I know lots of women. I have binders full of women. That's what this reminded me of. Why do we put people in weird containers? Why was it a basket of deplorables? Shows how fucking old she is. Anyway. Now we get to my story that I fucking love.
Oh, no!
Yes, yes, James, we're doing this story. Monica Riley, 27, from Fort Worth, Texas, is an obese model who is paid by men to eat piles of food. And she wants to become the world's fattest woman.
Wait, she's this entire story. Wait, I can pay her to kill herself?
Yes. This is how she makes her living. Is she?
Well, the word living is debatable.
This is how she makes the money to buy the chicken nuggets. Is she? And it's a lot of chicken nuggets, by the way. She does webcam shows where she eats while wearing lingerie and things like that. She is, drum roll please, 700 pounds. 700 pounds. But this is not enough for her. She is actively working on becoming 1,000 pounds so she can be the fattest woman. Actually wants to be immobile. Her boyfriend, Sid Riley, who refers to himself as a feeder, we'll get to that in a moment, spends his days cooking for Monica and feeding her 3,500 calorie shakes so that she can reach her goal. You're lucky, Midside fans, that this is an audio podcast only this week, because oh my god.
This picture will also be linked to.
Oh, it's not worth it. Among the things Monica, a model on supersized beautiful women websites, is looking forward to is being immobile so she can get a built-in toilet in her bed. The plan is to reach 1,000 pounds. I would feel like a queen because Sid would be waiting on me hand and foot, and he's excited about that. Quote, it's a sexual fantasy for us, and we talk about it a lot. He already has to help me get off the sofa and get me out of bed. If I lay down after a big dinner, he has to roll me over because my belly is too full for me to roll. It's a big turn on for both of us. Of him feeding her with a funnel.
I have a question.
Aight.
So let's assume this turns him on.
And it does, because he's part of the feederism movement.
Okay, we can get to that in a second. But my question is, with how big she is, how do you find the vagina? And how do you do it without getting an avalanche of fat on you and breaking your neck?
It requires snorkeling gear and a tub of Crisco. So I think that's probably the least of their problems, at least the least of hers.
I'm just saying, if you're saying it's a sexual thing, that means sex has to be involved. Otherwise, you're misusing the term. And I'm basically the subversive argument. That's not the word I'm looking for, but... The argument I'm making, basically, without making it, is that they're not actually having sex, is my argument.
Well, are you really going to make me say things like this?
Yes.
They don't have to be having intercourse in order to have sexual fantasies and sexual realizations, right? Like, he could theoretically be rubbing himself, we'll say, in various areas.
What's that called?
In various areas of her.
What's that called?
That are not her sexual organs would cause him pleasure.
Isn't there a term for that?
I have no idea if there's a term for that.
Oh, there is. I just can't remember it. I was hoping you did, and I was trying to play it off like I was trying to make you say it, but never mind. Continue.
So, okay, we've had our fun. Now there are some legitimate issues in this article that we need to discuss and bring in, hone in some philosophy on. Let's just do the first one, which is obvious, which is there was a point when she was 17 where her boyfriend was going to help her through bariatric surgery, but she decided to embrace her figure instead, opting out of weight loss surgery. She decided to embrace her figure and opt out of weight loss surgery. She says, the bigger I get, the sexier I feel. Is this the sort of love your body movement just gone totally off the fucking rails?
Yeah, I mean, it's the extreme of it. I mean, we go from recently they've been having plus size models and all that's been the rage now. Oh, we're normalizing plus size models. Well, you inevitably get to this point. My question is, how big was she at 17, does it say?
She looks to be about 300 pounds from the picture.
Yeah, from the picture, I would say 300 plus. Okay. Maybe even the mid-threes.
Maybe I've been listening to Adam and Dr. Drew too much, but I want to know who hurt her. Like, what's her trauma that she went through that she just decided to not help herself anymore?
Yes. Yes. That's, I mean, it's a very good point. Something probably has gone on in her life that has caused her to have these issues with internalizing herself and having self-esteem. And this is one of the ways she compensates for it. But I think this is one of, like, I can imagine someone on Reddit pointing to this woman as like the perfect example of objectivism, because she's doing whatever the hell she wants, regardless of what other people want. And I think it's important. By the way, her mother is fucking scared for her life in this article. She hates this, and rightfully so. Important for us to point out that selfishness is not self-destructiveness. Selfishness is doing what is in your rational long-term self-interest, and pure pleasure, pure hedonism, while it is often equated with selfishness and objectivism, is not at all. This is the end result of that horrible philosophy of hedonism, the idea that happiness and pleasure, specifically pleasure in every bite, pleasure in the next 3,500 calorie shake is what is true and good. This is the hedonistic goddess. This is what you get.
And James, building off of that, my question for you is, does this woman, and this is a loaded question, it's an obvious answer, but I want to hear you answer philosophically, does she have an unacknowledged subconscious death wish?
I wouldn't claim to know that. I see this sort of stuff as like the body image equivalent of narcissism. Whereas with in general self-esteem, you have kind of two ends of a spectrum. You have low self-esteem where you self and you end up having low, you have un, you have, you end up having low self-esteem because you overjudge yourself. You make everything your fault. And then on the opposite end of that spectrum, you have narcissism where you just ignore, you're so insecure that you just ignore any, you just deny any kind of problem with yourself whatsoever. When it comes to body image, usually what we hear about with women is that they have trouble. They have a self-esteem issue. They say, oh, I'm not good enough. My body isn't good enough. With this woman, she basically says, ah, fuck that. Like, I'm going to go the other direction and just problem with being overweight. It's not a it's not bad. I'm just going to go all the way with it. And you know, that's just a standard. There's all these people on the internet who are willing to, you know, tell me that this is a good thing, that this is beauty. So who's to say it's not beauty? And I embrace it, so that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I agree with what you're saying, and it makes sense, but I have to believe there's a line, and that the line's been crossed, and there's a line that you have to know when you're harming yourself at a certain point. And she has to know that she's harming herself.
Yeah, I think she does know... it's pretty obvious that she is harming herself. I mean, she acknowledges in the article that her mother is worried about her health. So it's not like no one has ever explained this to her before. It's a willful evasion at this point.
Right, and that's why I'm saying on some level I think there's a death wish here.
Or it's at least...
I don't think
want to frame it as death wish, then it's at least sort of the acknowledgement of that it's going to kill me and that I don't care. That's not necessarily a death wish. It's not the same.
I would describe it as a death premise. You're taking what is good, what is beautiful, and you're turning it on its head. You're saying, okay, like, who's to say we can't do the opposite? Well, life and death says you can't do the opposite. And so if you do the opposite, if you do what she's doing, you are choosing death. And she does, I don't know if she knows it, but her evasions go towards her not knowing that. So in a real sense, like, I don't know if it's a death wish, but it's a death premise.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll go first, I guess. For me, this woman is not really indicative of the problem. You're going to have people who have mental illness. This isn't volitional, but I would still count it as a mental illness, perhaps brought on volitionally. But in any kind of society, you will have people with these sorts of mental illnesses. I think the problem is that they're going to be more and more prevalent as society becomes more acknowledging of mental illness, such as transgenderism, which I think there's a large body of to believe that is a mental illness, but it's being accepted as a body image kind of identity issue rather than an issue of reality versus illusion. And I think this is only going to get worse. One of the things I think we're going to eventually see is pedophiles and their sexual preferences be legitimized mainstream.
Yeah.
Not necessarily saying that their relationships should be legalized, although that may happen, but I think we're going to see a discussion soon on the part of the more fringe leftists that maybe we shouldn't, you know, maybe we should question the premise that sexual excitement brought on by minors is a bad thing. Maybe it's just a different sexual preference. Maybe it's no better or no worse than anything.
There's already the New York Times, not recently, but maybe 2 years ago, ran an opinion piece with that exact premise.
Right.
Yeah. And I think you'll see it more and more. I think you're right. Now, there's one other issue here, sort of related to children, kind of weird, that I want to bring up, and we don't have to do it all that. We can do it very quickly, which is, this is the part of the article that horrified me, by the way, and this is my having listened to Adam and Dr. Drew too much lately, which is Monica and Sid are trying for a baby and have endured two miscarriages so far. Monica said, quote, "We do plan to have children. There's nothing to stop me raising a child from my bedroom." What the actual fuck?
Well, yeah, there is. It's called Child Protective Services.
Well, that was going to be my question. Is this a legitimate? No, I mean, it's funny, but I did want to laugh more than I just did. But the legitimate political question is would it be a legitimate use of the government to intervene here?
Yes. This is why I don't believe in anarchy.
Wow. Yeah. That's rough. I think you'd have to diagnose her mentally as incompetent somehow.
It's not just mentally. She can't physically provide for the child. She can't move to get out and do the things the child needs.
Well, in case you haven't noticed, Sid is more than capable of providing in some sense. Sid, the boyfriend, what's another mouth to feed when he's already, you know, feeding the equipment, 10.
Oh, accidentally putting the baby in the funnel would be a disaster. But, yeah.
Basically, Justin, Daniel, the answer is yes, but it would have to be on a very medical, psychological basis. They'd have to be judged as incompetent because you don't want you know, Child Protective Services power, being able to just take babies away from anyone just because they seem a little off, you know. Oh, this person believes
a little off.
Yeah. But you need to, it can't just be that they're off. Like, you need to specifically say what's wrong with them and why that renders them incapable of caring.
She's 700 pounds and wants to be 1,000 pounds. That's what's wrong with her.
Well, Justin, this is why we have philosophy.
I feel like Adam Carolla right now, Daniel, and he's Dr. Drew. Like, it doesn't fucking matter what her goddamn condition is. Yeah, great, Drew. If you want to go get her help and fix her and everything, that's wonderful. Go do it. But you gotta fucking look at her. She can't have a kid. She's not allowed. End of story. I don't care what the fucking reason is.
Her body is...
There's two miscarriages,
and right,
too.
Her body is telling her that she's not fit to have children, by the way.
Obesity
can lead to miscarriages.
That means reality's on my side.
Well, before we move on, just quickly, feederism is a subcategory of fat fetishism, where individuals harbor a strong or even exclusive sexual attraction to people who are overweight or obese. Feederism involves sexual gratification in regard to gaining or helping others gain weight. So... look for that more in the mainstream as we accept our bodies.
Hey, I'm bulking right now.
Oh, Twinkie lives matter.
I just went up like 50 pounds. Wait, by the way, no. Please don't say that, because Twinkie is like a term for gay dude. But
oh, whoops.
Yeah. I just went up 15 pounds, feederism people out there.
I don't think you're going to be wanting the... this movement. You're D.
It's a joke. But okay. Let's move on. There's a lot more to talk about in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. I want to hit a couple quick reviews here, and then we'll have a little bit more of a longer discussion. It's not going to be very drawn out, but there'll be some interesting things to say about the last property. The first one I want to talk about is Donald Glover's new show Atlanta finally premiered. I watched the first episode. They apparently aired two. I only watched one. I would give this basically an average rating. I'd say it's between a 6 and a 7. It had his trademark humor in it. There was some very funny stuff in it. The best way I can describe this is 8 Mile meets Silicon Valley. So Donald Glover is a Princeton dropout, and you don't know why. You don't even really know if he dropped out. It's just insinuated. Who's trying to make it, but he's struggling. He doesn't have a job. He's got a baby mama who he lives with, but she's dating someone else. And then he finds out his cousin is an underground rapper who's starting to get success, so he tries to become his manager. And he eventually does become his manager in the episode, and then the episode ends with there's a shooting, and then they're both suspects in the shooting, and their mugshots are on TV. And that's sort of the Silicon Valley element to it, where it seems like at the end of the episode he's finally going to have success, but then this absurd thing happens and moves on. Another reason I compare it to Silicon Valley is, if you like that kind of content, the rap culture, black inner city culture, you'll like it, just like you'll like Silicon Valley if you like the sort of nerdy culture they're talking about in that show. The thing that appealed to me about it was he was really portrayed as the smart guy who's trying to deal with all the stupidity around him and cope with the stupidity around him. That was the most appealing angle to it, but there's a lot of social commentary trying to go on with this show. I probably won't continue watching it just because there's so much to watch and it's hard to devote time to something I'm not super excited about. The next thing I want to talk about is Stranger Things. I know Daniel's seen it. James, have you seen it?
Everyone keeps telling me that I gotta see it, and I still haven't. I've been playing Destiny, Rise of Iron, and No Man's Sky. That's all I've been doing.
Well, I mean, I don't know why you're playing a game that's so oppressive with the patriarchal No Man's Sky. Why can't it be No Woman's Sky too, right? As that article said. But I mean, I know
no Z's guy.
No Z's guy. I would say you don't need to watch it. I would give it, I would say, an 8. And the 8 is almost purely on production value. The production value is tremendous. There's only two things in the entire 8 episodes I could fault it on. One, there was one bad edit I saw. And usually I see bad edits across the entire thing. But it basically felt like it was shot like a feature film. And then at another point, the young girl with the shaved head puts on a wig. And it looks like it's not a wig anymore, which I guess is great hair and makeup job by the hair and makeup department. But the kids in the show don't have the hair and makeup department to have her wear a wig that well. So those are the only two production things. But from a story standpoint, I didn't think there was much of an in-depth theme. It was typical 80s Spielberg type deal where, you know, just like Super 8 when J.J. Abrams did that movie to pay homage to Super 8, like the Goonies, where it was very much about community and staying together and believing in each other and going on this adventure. But I didn't think it had a well-defined intellectual abstract theme in that way. It was more of like a, I don't know, the way Ayn Rand describes Gone with the Wind's theme, where it's just like, this is a romance in the, you know, antebellum, or maybe, I don't know if that's the correct phrase, but, you know, post-Civil War South type deal. What did you think, Daniel?
Yeah, I generally agree. To clarify for people, Stranger Things is a Netflix show that has an incredibly 80s theme to it, down to the title sequence and all the music is all very 80s. And so that's a lot of why people are reacting to it. A lot of people our age grew up with shows like this, so there's a lot of nostalgia around it. And
in that same sense, I think a lot of nerdy people from the 80s are responding to it because it's sort of like Freaks and Geeks, where it celebrates the nerd culture of that time. The kids play Dungeons and Dragons. They even have the science teacher on a date with an Asian woman when he's called by the kids. So it sort of very much loves that. And, it's all about, basically it's like A Link to the Past, where there's the upside down world, which is like the dark dimension in A Link to the Past, Legend of Zelda.
Wow, nerdy reference to explain a nerdy show. Well done. And the basic plot is some like this. There's this little girl whose name is Eleven. She seems to have powers. They don't know where she finds these kids whose friend is missing. And what is the connection between these two things? It's a mystery. Winona Ryder is in it. I thought she gave a good performance as a batshit crazy mom. I like it.
Who wasn't crazy at all. That was the point.
Yes, I know, but her actions are very crazy. And that's... What was that, James?
Oh, you
did James say something? Or that's all right.
It's not really a spoiler.
So here's my overall evaluation of the show: is that it's well done. It's a nice show. It's sort of entertaining without being all that intellectual, which is fine once in a while. You know, it's just a nice little mystery story. It's some good acting. I thought some of the kids did really well. I'd probably give it a 7. I don't need to see any more of it. They're going to get another season, but it's, from what I understand, it's going to be a completely different show. Like, it's just going to be a brand new story. And Stephen King is writing it.
Oh, so. I hadn't heard about the Stephen King thing. That's interesting. Yeah, this is one of those where it's sort of like, maybe it would have been best if they just left it alone. But I have read that the creators, the Duffer Brothers, have a 30-page document about what the Upside Down is and all of this stuff, because they don't reveal that much about it.
Yeah, so there'll be some relation, but it's not going to be the same cast of characters, from what I understand.
Yeah, they're adding like 3 new characters, so they'll probably keep a lot of the kids and everything. But it'll be interesting to see how they go forward with it. But here's the thing: this is, you know, we talk about, you know, internet commenting and the reactionary nature of it and the way the type of people who are online have a certain perspective. Part of it is shows like these get hyped up. Remember how hyped up Daredevil was? Well, this is hyped up too. And I wish people would stop being so reactionary and making it seem like this is, like James is saying, this is a must-see. Because I felt the same sort of almost pressure from people too. Like, oh man, this is such an amazing show. Everyone needs to watch it. Is it good? Yeah. Does everyone need to watch it? No, it's not that upper echelon level show. I would say Hannibal is much more a must-watch over this. But it'll never get mentioned that way because it doesn't have the reactionary sort of internet peer pressure behind it.
Yeah. It had all the right elements of a show to go viral, is what it had.
Exactly.
That's what Netflix kind of aims for, doesn't it? They kind of just...
Yeah, that's their entire algorithm.
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
All right. Last thing we want to review here is Clint Eastwood's new movie, Sully. This stars Tom Hanks, and it's about the guy who his nickname is Sully that landed the plane coming out of JFK onto the Hudson River. This story is basically about the aftermath of it and looking back and reflecting on the event and the NTSB, aka the government, looking at Sully and saying, no, you messed up. And Sully having to deal with them coming at him at the same time he has this PTSD from this major trauma he went through, and him figuring out how to deal with that and put everything together.
By the way, his full name, Chesley Burnett Sullenberger III.
There you go.
Oh,
wow.
Fucking, what a name.
Yeah.
Like a sad hamburger, Sullenberger.
Now, I want to save the ratings for the end here, Daniel, because I want to say I described it that way on purpose, because the description I gave almost sounds naturalistic, because the choice seems to have already happened. The decision seems to have already happened. It's the decision to land the plane on the Hudson. That seems to be the heroic decision. But there's actually another heroic decision in this movie. And that heroic decision flips the entire movie on its head. So the beginning of the movie is almost shot in a way that I think it's intentionally mocking naturalism in a way. It's a very other perspective. There's even a memory of the plane crash, which isn't shown from Sully and the co-pilot's perspective at all. It's all from the other emergency services around the Hudson. And from all the passengers, you get all their stories and everything and how they're suffering by having to jump in the water or be on the wing, or be really scared. And everything's done from that perspective where no one's really making a decision. They're just sort of dealing with what reality is presenting to them, and they're victims in that way. And this is very much supposed to be the NTSB's perspective on the crash. And then...
Yeah, the National Transportation Safety Board.
Yes. And then, at the end, it flips on its head when Sully finally gets his say... And in a very Randian scene, says, what about the human element? And that gets added in, and everyone finally realizes how heroic Sully actually is. And they shoot, Eastwood shows again the plane crash, the plane forced landing, but it's all from Sully's perspective. And that was such an interesting way to do a movie to me, because it's the way you would expect it to be done for like an Oscar bait film to start with. But it was, to me, it was very difficult to watch because I was like, I don't want to see these people as victims. They were saved. And where the fuck is Sully's perspective? This is making me angry. But it's a very intentional choice because it's like they shot the whole thing and edited one movie in and took the naturalistic movie and put it as the first remembrance of the crash. And then took the romantic ending, a romantic version, and put it in the second remembrance of the crash.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I go ahead.
You know what this description reminds me of? Have any of you either read or seen in play An Enemy of the People?
No.
No.
That is, An Enemy of the People is like the closest you're ever going to get to Ayn Rand that isn't Ayn Rand, basically. It's a play about individualism, but at first it isn't. The beginning of the play is very naturalistic in its style. It just has everyone's just so fucking boring, and everyone's just, his daughter comes in the room and says, oh, I'm going off to school, da-da-da-da-da, and, you know, it's just, nothing remarkable ever happens.
His daughter is Russell Brand.
Yeah. bullshit.
I think his daughter is Russell Brand. Oh God, that would be terrible. But then a conflict happens in the play, and everything just goes to shit. Everything is just exploded. The entire naturalist kind of like drab, boring thing is just destroyed, And then the main character emerges as an individualistic hero. So, like, it's just it's very striking, and it's by Ibsen.
Interesting.
Oh, well, that's why it's good.
Yeah.
Right. So, I definitely advocate reading it. And what you're talking, I want to see this movie now. It looked kind of boring from the previews, but maybe that's sort of...
marketed as a naturalistic thing. Like, that whole line about, like, when's the last time you had a drink, Sully? Like, make it seem like the whole movie's about his alcoholism? That's like a throwaway line at the beginning of the movie. He's like, 2 years ago?
Nine?
And then you just move on.
No, he said 9 days ago.
Oh, whatever. I was exaggerating.
Yeah. By like 700 days.
Well, to me, there is no difference between 9 days and 2 years, okay?
Certainly when it comes to drinking, you straight edge bastard.
That was the point.
Here's the thing about this movie. I wouldn't have described it the way Justin described it after I saw the movie. I wouldn't have said the first ballistic. It's a Clint Eastwood nuanced, subtle character piece. The thing about this movie for me is that I knew it wasn't naturalistic because of the directing choices. The directing choices throughout the entire picture are just stunning. They're stunning in a way that only Clint Eastwood has been able to do in recent history. It's things like all of these choices showing Sully in reflections. Because a lot of this movie is about thinking and reflecting back on things. So all these different reflections of Sully, or these shots showing him larger than life in ways that are like when he's running, for instance, at night, and he's running across a bridge, and his shadow is cast huge across the smoke coming up under the street from the sewers. It's a film that could have been shot in black and white in the 40s, but modernized and made beautiful. The color, like in all Clint Eastwood movies, is very subtle and dull, and almost like he wanted to shoot it in black and white. The movie is so nuanced and beautiful. There is some pacing where if you're one of those people who has to have an action sequence every 7 minutes, you're probably not going to enjoy this film. But if you like nuanced and emotionally gripping, like I probably cried through 21.5% of this movie. Like, legitimate, emotionally gripping scenes. My favorite movie since Interstellar. I don't think it's necessarily a better movie than Interstellar, but it is my favorite movie since Interstellar in just its totality. Taken in its totality, it is just an outstanding work of art.
Are you going to rate it?
Oh, so I guess my rating is pretty high. My rating is a 9.
You know what? For once, we are on the same page.
Whoa!
My rating is also a 9. And I would say that I agree with what you said. But I actually think this is the kind of movie that's intended to be watched multiple times. And I don't think the first time through, you're supposed to pick up all of these nuanced directing choices you've noticed. I think only the second time through, when you can be comfortable with the knowledge that he's a hero, can you pick all of those things up. Because the first time through, where you don't know where it's going, you don't necessarily know it's going to end with him being a hero. Because there's not many clues that that's the place it's going to go.
Yeah. There are two quick things we need to mention about this movie in general. Because I agree with that. And maybe it's just because
you trusted Eastwood more than I did, is what you did.
I trusted Eastwood, and I saw Sully as a hero going in. So one is, very quickly, we have to talk about the cultural sort of thing surrounding this. And well, one of the main critiques of this movie is that Sully is too much of a hero.
Mm.
Which made me want to see it more, by the way.
But I think that's because their expectation was set up for it to be a naturalistic movie where the hero is undermined. And then when they didn't get what they wanted, they were upset. That's where I think that reaction's coming from. We want to talk about culture. One of the main people saying it is Jen Yamamoto. If you want to know who she is, she's one of the most vocal anti-Batman versus Superman and Suicide Squad critics out there. Coincidence?
Yeah. Yeah, that's ridiculous. By the way, like, the Guardian doesn't hold back, by the way. their review for this movie is called Sullied. With Sully, Clint Eastwood is weaponizing a hero. Like, they're basically saying he's brandishing hero as a weapon, and that's a bad thing. Just disgusting. That's from The Guardian?
Yeah.
Wow.
MTV brings out the race thing, that they're upset that Clint Eastwood made another, like, white male the hero, basically.
So, fucking Sully, Chesley Sullenberger should have been played by, Dikembe Mutombo? Like, that'd be a bold
Denzel
choice.
Denzel Washington.
He did a flying movie, and he was a drunk. I'm done with that.
That was a joke.
Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker.
How are you going to believe he could see to fly the plane properly?
No depth perception. What about...
James, no. So... We're losing James, I think, by the way. I have not heard a word James has said in like 21 lines or something.
No, he's like the Peanuts, just... the adults of the Peanuts.
He just sounds like wah, 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 yeah. Wah, 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 wah.
All right, you said there's one other cultural thing?
Oh, one other cultural thing is very simple, which is that I think fucking Clint Eastwood has hit his stride. And if I could magically award someone like 20 more years of life, it would be Clint Eastwood, because I want more Clint Eastwood movies. And Clint Eastwood is, I just looked this up, I was shocked, he is 86 years old.
Wow.
I thought it was like 82 or 81, but he is 86 years old. So not much longer. Unfortunately, I hope he can make 10 more movies before he dies, because I'm excited. So moving on.
So let's take down some trailers. Then we'll hit a little interview that was done by Jeff Johns about the future of the DCEU, and then we'll be out for this episode. How does that sound, guys?
Yeah, fuck Reddit.
Yeah, we don't need to handle Reddit. We just got this with this stuff. So, Daniel, I'm going to say trailer takedown, and then you hit it, okay? It's time for trailer takedown.
Trailer takedown!
First trailer. Westworld. This is a show on HBO about Anthony Hopkins creating the Wild West for people to visit. And then there are, of course, people who want to free the robots and such. Because it's, you know, slavery or some shit. I don't know. It wasn't very clear in the trailer. What did you guys think?
Well, it's HBO. So obviously the production value is going to be through the roof. And, I do love me some Anthony Hopkins. His nuanced acting in the trailer, the final scene where she says, "Are we old friends?" And he says, "Well, no." And then there's like this huge long pause that they let breathe in the trailer, which is amazing. You don't see it in a trailer. So I wouldn't say that at all. And it's just the stunning delivery of that line gave me chills. He's just that good of an actor. So it's hard to pass that up. But that being said, fuck it. No. I couldn't stand the naturalistic piece of garbage that is Game of Thrones. And most of HBO's shows are that sort of naturalisticness, even though the production quality is insane. So I will not be watching any of this. I'm tackling this to the ground and kicking it while it's down.
James?
Well, so what I'm doing is, am I a robot right now, by the way?
No, you're good. Keep going.
You're good. You're good now. Although it would have been more appropriate now.
Yeah, I know.
Jesus.
Now you can go to Westworld and take advantage of the robots rather than being taken advantage of.
All right. Well, let me know if I become a robot. I was really sucked into this preview. I'm hugging the movie, but I'm hugging it with sort of a little bit of, like, in a way that makes the hair on my neck stand on end. It's not going to be a pleasant hug. It's like, I'm really interested in this, but it scares me. So I will be watching the first couple episodes of this.
Yeah, I am also tentatively hugging it. It looks kind of didactic, and a million things have been done like it before, but it looks like it could be executed very well. So I will watch it to see what the execution's like just because of the production value. So a tentative hug. The next one, next trailer, is a Netflix original movie, I believe, called Mascots. and it's about a world championship where 20 mascots are brought in to compete and be judged, like the dog show, the Westminster Dog Show. I believe it's also directed by the guy who did Best in Show, correct?
Yes.
Yes. It's a comedy, and I'm going to go first here. I am going to hug this because I laughed very hard at this trailer because it has a great cast. It has Gabe from Silicon Valley in it, and he's hilarious in it. And also, why has no one thought to put Ed...
Jared?
Yeah, Jared. Sorry, why did I call him Gabe? I don't know why I call him Gabe. Jared, sorry. I apologize. And I don't know why anyone... Why has no one thought to put Ed Begley Jr. and Jane Lynch together before? I would watch... I'm going to watch it just for that. They were hilarious together.
Yeah, they were good. They were funny. Their chemistry was awesome. So, despite the fact that I despise everything Ed Begley Jr. stands for, he is a funny son of a bitch in comedies.
Yeah, who cares what he stands for outside of it? He can fucking, he's hilarious.
Yeah. It's the eyes. He has wonky eyes. I like it. So you were saying any more from you?
No, I already said it. I'm hugging this movie, and that's why. Or, yeah, this movie, and that's why.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give a light pat on the back kind of hug. Like, after I'm through with the rest of my Netflix queue, I'll get to this, and I'll probably think it's fine. It's hard. Like, the reason, like, movies like Best in Show or going back in for, like, Spinal Tap work is they didn't come off as self-aware. And that's what I think is going to be the downfall of this satire, is it's going to come off as too self-aware as a satire. And unfortunately, I think that's what will be the bad thing about it. That being said, I will give anything Christopher Guest does, at least an initial viewing. And the Jared guy, whose name I can never remember, looks funny. And by the way, Fred Willard is another one of those people that I could just watch him read the phone book and I'd probably fucking pee my pants.
And again, he's just that reminds me.
That good.
Fred Willard in a scene with Brad Williams.
Yes, talking about Brad Williams being a dwarf.
Yes.
Like, did they shrink you for that costume? Yes, he can say anything and I will laugh. He's awesome. So I'll give it a tentative, you know, like friend, like maybe a side hug. That's what I'll give it. James?
I'm going to give this a hug, but only the kind of hug you'd like give a retarded person. Cause like standing behind you, telling you that you have to do this. That's yeah. It looks really retarded.
Okay. Moving on.
All right. Let's set up this last trailer.
By the way, breaking news. Clint Eastwood endorses Sully Sullenberger for president.
Did he actually?
Yes, indeed.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did. ABC News is reporting Clint Eastwood on why Sully Sullenberger should be president.
I'm so glad Clint Eastwood is not in favor of Trump. That is a huge load off my shoulders.
Yeah, there you go. Sorry, had to bring that in. Breaking news. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen, and probably nowhere else.
Actually, it's only if you listen to this podcast when it first gets uploaded, but yeah. All right, last trailer here. It's called In Dubious Battle. It is based on a John Steinbeck novel about people basically forming a union and striking against a company.
What?
I didn't even know.
Steinbeck novel about a union?
I didn't even know it was a Steinbeck. I like Googled it later. I was like, this has to be a Steinbeck. And it stars a pretty good cast as well. My favorite thing I think about this trailer was it was like James Franco, and then Emmy nominee, Academy Award nominee, Academy Award winner, Academy Award nominee, and Selena Gomez.
Who looks 13 still. Yes.
Yeah, well, they were like, hey, let's like not put any makeup on Selena Gomez or anything. So I want to hug this movie because it has such a good cast and the production value looks pretty good. and they look like they did everything they could possible to make a John Steinbeck novel exciting and interesting, but it's still a John Steinbeck novel, so I have to tackle this. Like,
yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. I remember having to read Steinbeck when I was in school, and I always wanted to just shoot myself in the face. I read The Little Pony.
Oh, that's the worst.
Red Pony, and I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? They're trying to save this pony, and then it dies. That's, sorry, spoiler alert, the fucking book's no, don't watch it.
Oh, that's...
Read it, just watch it, and make sure it doesn't get anywhere near you.
We need Midsider Michael on to defend Steinbeck. I think he's the only person I've ever met in my entire life who's not a leftist douche who loves John Steinbeck. But
what happened to him?
He was abused as a child. But outside of that, okay, so this movie needs to be tackled hard. Hard. Like, seriously? Fucking William Refrigerator Perry, like, up against the goalpost hard. Kind of tackle.
That's a,
like,
Clemson alum there.
Yeah.
I need to root for the strike breakers.
Yeah.
If I lived back in this time, I would totally be a Pinkerton. I would love doing that. Have a Winchester rifle, one of those douchey round hats, and a monocle. I don't even need a monocle, but I'd have one just to wear while shooting these companies.
Here's the thing about this movie. This movie could have won me. Like, this movie, the trailer could have brought me in, especially because of the cast. Side note on cast, actors and actresses, or do we just say actors now? Whatever. People who act are so cheap now because of the way the movie industry works. I have 45 giant actors in it. Like, every single movie I see now has 73 Academy Award nominated actors.
Mm-hmm.
Not being paid anything anymore. So anyway, so that doesn't mean anything anymore. But two, it could have had me because of the story about, like, a bad guy trying to take advantage of people. That's all fine. But this trailer tries so hard to hit every possible leftist trope that by the end, I was just fucking laughing. Like, where it cuts to the little girl, and she's like, Mommy, I don't have enough food to eat. And then the ending scene is like, this isn't about us, baby. It's like, wow. Wow. You are just hitting all of the nonsense. It's crazy. Like, I just, I couldn't believe it. So, fucking tackle.
All right. So, let's move on to some also depressing news. The Wall Street Journal published an article this week, which was a reporter writing up an interview he did with Jeff Johns. And this is basically Jeff Johns' coming out party as the man who is leading the DC film slate. So previously it was Zack Snyder. He was in charge of everything. And now it's Jeff Johns. We've seen this coming down the pipeline a little bit with, you know, all the different leaks post Batman versus Superman, post Suicide Squad, about all the changes and everything. But this is really where Johns came out and said things like, you know, it's not about being dark and brooding. It's about being light and hopeful, which, you know, apparently he doesn't even understand that Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman were about hope. But that's another discussion. The question I have for you guys is, I want to see if your reading of this article was similar to mine. My immediate reaction after reading this was, Snyder is no longer going to be in the DCEU after Justice League. It said that they're not going to do, like, a multi-story Justice League anymore. It's just the one. And they also said things like, or John said things like, you know, we're going to do less of the flourishes that Zack Snyder likes to do in his movies. And he seemed to equate, like, the character depth that Snyder has with the flourishes. So it seems they're trying to... It felt like almost Johns was throwing Snyder under the bus without throwing him under the bus. Especially because Snyder's representative refused to even comment.
Yeah, it certainly seems like not a great situation there. Here, look, I've said this a million times. The movie industry ultimately is a giant machine that makes money. That's all it is. If Justice League and Wonder Woman and the next few movies just fucking bank, and not even, I mean, banked, but if these next movies just rake it in, who knows what could happen? Who knows? Snyder could be up to make another 100 Justice League movies if they think they're going to make anywhere near that amount of money. So it's all yet to be seen. It's all conjecture. I mean, yes, studios try to have long-term plans, but at the same time, they're a business like any other. And if it looks like they can make a gazillion dollars doing what they do with Zack Snyder, they're going to do it. And if they can't, they're not. It's that simple.
So how much of this then do you think is the studio's real perspective, or if it's John's positioning himself to try and sort of get power from Snyder? Because I think there's an argument to be made that since Batman vs. Superman came out, Johns has been, in a way, politicizing to get power out from under Snyder's control.
Yeah, I mean, it happens in any... There's politics in any company. There's politics in any industry. It happens that some people want power, some people don't want power. Some people just want to be left alone, man, to create. Dude. Which I think is where Snyder is, and he's going to pay the price of not paying attention to office politics in a sense, because I think that's just sort of what's going on. Will it work? Don't know. No idea.
Yeah, but
do I know his real motivation? Of course not. But, you know, well, best we can do is go give our money to see the movie. If we really like it, give our money to see it again or something and support Zack Snyder.
Right.
That's the only way to help.
Right. And, you know, be supportive in the way you talk about it and speak about it. That's why we do things like the Snyder series. Because I wanted to, you know, have Daniel especially say that stuff because he comes across as more rational regarding this than I do. But I think it's important to identify what Johns is doing for what he's doing, and that he's couching this, you know, awareness and caring for DC, or he's couching his politics in this awareness and caring for DC. To make it seem like he's on the side of the fans, when really I think he's more worried about the way he looks and his image type deal. So that's why I brought this in.
Yeah, maybe we'll never know the full story behind the scenes. So that's just rah-rah Snyder. And although, you know, I'm going to criticize him where I don't like Marvin.
We will be recording that episode soon.
Yeah.
All right. What did we learn this trip, Daniel?
I learned that basically you can literally fall over onto a javelin, have your body dumped into a wood chipper, and then fed to raw dogs, shat out, burned, buried, and then the ashes sent to the moon eventually. And if you're Hillary Clinton's campaign, it'll say it's just a flesh wound. Or the equivalent thereof. And your fans will still support you. So basically what I'm saying is I need to marry Chelsea.
Ew.
Ultimate political power. Yeah.
James?
What I sort of learned this week, Justin, is sort of on the last thing, is that, you know, it seemed like Johns is just sort of caving to the sort of internet trolling, like that you're always commenting on. But I think the point to be taken from what Daniel said is not so much of a negative one, like, oh, well, it's just a money making machine. It's a positive one. If the films make money, got all, you know, these six people on the internet who keep criticizing all about, and the way that Zack Snyder actually brings that about in movie form.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree that there it's a good thing, and that, you know, let the
it's easy to take seriously, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I guess you already know. That's why you mentioned the six people on the internet,
right? And to be fair, I think it's a good thing too. Let the audience decide, and I think the audience has decided with things like Suicide Squad. If you look at the money it's been making. And at the same time, I don't think Johns is caving to the internet trolls. I think he's using them to his advantage. And I think that's the difference.
Yeah. Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that my gaining weight should be helping me more than it is. I didn't realize there was a whole subculture that would appreciate the fact that I'm trying to gain weight and like encourage
Hashtag feederism.
Yeah. No, seriously, though, I didn't know that. It shouldn't surprise me, but I didn't know those type of people existed. So, ugh.
If there is some horrible thing, there is a fetish for that horrible thing. Is that someone's law? I forget whose, though.
Rule 34. No, that's if it exists, there's porn of it.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Basically, I just appropriated it. I made a slight little razor out of it, I guess. Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, it has been fun. But ladies and gentlemen, it's been fun, but it's time for us to go. We've had a wonderful time with you, and hopefully you've had a wonderful time with us. And if so, one of the main things that you can do for us, one of the things that helps us more than anything else out there, is to tell someone else about your trip here to the Midside. Tell them there's this magical place where unicorns run wild, and we can tell racist jokes, and no one cares. It's wonderful. And yeah, let your friends know, let your family know. That guy in the office next to you who's always eating the burrito, let him know. He's probably lonely. And then, of course, if you don't want to tell a friend directly because you're an introvert, that's fine. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating. Search for Midside. Give us a 5-star rating. And then, of course, you can go to themidside.com/podcast, facebook.com/themidside, Instagram, The Midside, Snapchat, The Midside, Twitter, The Midside. For media there? Justin, I think we're good. And,
we're good.
Of course, James.
Patreon.
Yes. Thank you, James. .com/themidside. Patreon, for all of you who are... don't know, Patreon allows you, the guy putting a finger in your own chest, or the girl putting a finger in your own chest, allows you to donate real money to help keep the lights on for this podcast. But not just any old money. We're just not going to leech off your bank account. What we're going to do is every time we create a piece of content is when you agree to give us some money. That could be any amount. It could be a dollar. Would you pay a dollar for this pod? Okay. Would you pay 50? Would you pay 38 and a half cents for this podcast? You can do that over at Patreon per episode. And that helps us out. We're going to use that money someday. Justin will stop hoarding it for himself and pops and porn and allow us to actually buy some nice things someday. But until then, we love you and adore you. And we hope you join
I just
us.
Want to be clear what? Based upon this week. You can opt out whenever you
just
want.
Just be clear.
You are not required to be a Patreon donor until you die, like Teresa was. You can opt out whenever you want.
That's true. You can. If you want to just do it 1 month, well, that's awesome. We'll take it. 1 month is fantastic. Absolutely. So thanks so much, and see you next time.
I'm Justin M. Wisniewski, and I hope you learned something this trip. This concludes your journey into... The Midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Yeah.